Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. Listeners, thank you for joining us once more. We are now at the fourth episode of the review of The Path to Redemption. As you may remember, last week, Maria and her newly found Italian friend Silvia had reached the town of Locarcos. And while exploring the small town, they were attracted to the church of Santa Maria by the heavenly sound of a choir and organ music. Both the friends agreed to hear Holy Mass in the beautiful Romanesque church. Here, a sense of peace came upon Maria. She felt a glow inside her, a great sense of contentment and peace. The physical effort she had to make in order to get here also contributed to the feeling of contentment. She was pleased to find that Silvia too agreed that everything was just perfect. The music, the choir, the mass, and of course the church itself. Before six next morning, Maria woke up to the sound of the church bells from the nearby parish of Santa Maria. She planned to walk the long way to Logroño that day, so an early start was ideal. After she had dressed and packed her rucksack, Maria went to look for Silvia, who was in another dormitory. Unfortunately, Maria was disappointed to find her friend struggling to get out of bed and looking quite wan. Silvia is feeling unwell, but she insists that she should not hold Maria back, and she promises to catch up as soon as she feels better. So once more, Maria decides she has to go along on her own, although she knows she is going to miss Silvia's companionship. By mid-morning, she had reached Torres de Rio, where she stopped for a snack, a bocadillo. Pilgrims walked by, others stopped, and with some she exchanged a few words before continuing along her way, alone, with her thoughts coming up to the surface. Without stopping at Viana on her way to Logroño, she passed a sign that read La Rioja. She had entered one of Spain's smallest provinces, famous for their wines.
La Rioja is one of the smallest of the autonomous provinces of Spain. Its capital is the city of Logroño, and its principal economic activity is wine production. La Rioja wines are among the best in Spain and use mainly Tempranillo grapes. Most wines are aged in oak barrels for 1 year and in the bottle for 1 year or more. The aging process is known as crianza. La Rioja produces over 3 million hectolitres of wine each year.
Logroño, Maria decided to give herself a break from the pilgrim's routine and chose to overnight at a hotel, the Marques de Vallejo. A small but very attractive hotel. Here, she became aware of how aloof and detached the hotel customers were when compared to the pilgrims. There was none of the easy camaraderie, the happy, relaxed chit-chat that she experienced among pilgrims. After taking some clothes to a laundry and passing by the cathedral to say a prayer for the repose of her mother, she made her way to the town square, to a restaurant recommended by the hotel receptionist. Here she had a very pleasing meal of croquetas and pimientos de padrón, followed by a selection of cheeses and a glass of Rioja. As she sat at the restaurant watching life go by, Maria saw a group of some 10 young men dressed in traditional and very colorful costumes and armed with guitars and mandolins who started to play music and to sing. "It is La Tuna, Signora," the waiter explained. "This is a tradition that goes back many hundreds of years and sees university students sing old songs and serenatas to earn some money." It was truly magical, and she was mesmerized by their skill. Finding the music and the singing so exciting, she enjoyed every moment of it.
La Tuna describes groups of university students who played on traditional instruments like the bandurria, which is a member of the lute family, the lute, the guitar and the tambourine, and they sang serenatas. La Tuna originated in Spain and Portugal in the 13th century as a way for students to earn money to cover the cost of their books and their studies. Nowadays they do it to keep the tradition alive, for fun and to raise money for travel. The origin of the name is thought to be from a king of Tunis, who loved music and who walked around the streets playing and singing. La Tuna groups are still very active in Santiago and other cities of Spain. They dress in traditional student dress, which is very colorful, and they play to enthusiastic audiences in the streets and squares.
Maria had checked over the phone with Sylvia, and to her joy found out that her friend had recovered. She hoped, therefore, that Sylvia could catch up and that they could resume their walk together. Maria had also made contact with her sister Joanna back in Malta to assure her that all was well and that her Camino proceeded safely. She had another long day coming up, and it was already quite late, so Maria made her way back to her hotel, looking forward to another day of rambling towards her final goal. Where have we left James in the meantime? Oh, yes, he had met the four Canadian ladies who, we now learn, he nicknamed the Toronto Four. In their company, and over a glass of wine or two, he temporarily forgot his distress. The ladies have been friends for a long time and have travelled across Canada and North America many times together, leaving their husbands to enjoy their games of golf. The scenery there, they tell James, is spectacular, but there is none of the history, the culture, and the cultural diversity that there is here in Europe. James enjoys their company, and he decides to walk with them, although he found that he had to slow his pace down somewhat for them to keep up with him. As the Toronto Four talk about themselves, about their lives and families, James learns that three out of the four ladies have had a brush with cancer. James was surprised at how matter-of-fact they were about it. He admired them for that, and he wondered how he would feel if he had something like that hanging over his head. This brings his mind back to the fact that he does have something hanging over his head, something for which he had been responsible. His tragic misdeed comes back to haunt him after a few days, when the effort for the long hours of walking, the scenery and the new experience had somewhat blurred the sad thoughts. The sense of guilt and the low sense of esteem triggered by having caused the death of the poor old lady. Thank you. James walks along with the group until the ladies decide to stop at the town of Estella, where he instead has decided to walk as far as Monjardin. As he passes by Fuente de Irate, he sees a number of his fellow walkers stopping to fill their conch shells with red wine. But he thought to himself that red wine was the last thing he needed, as it would make him drowsy. So he plodded on along the walk. Loneliness and sad thoughts flooded his mind. Uncertainty about whether he would meet his four friends again gave him a sense of loss. He thought about the loss the old lady's family had sustained, and that made him feel still worse. He asked himself what he had achieved, as, so far, notwithstanding the discomfort and suffering, he still felt no sense of atonement. But he trudged on in the hope of finding some relief and reaching his goal, that day, the hilltop village of Villa Mayor de Monjardin. This is a small town which is not visited by many pilgrims, as it is not placed at the end of a leg of the Camino. In fact, Monjardin is pretty desolate, since few of the guidebooks place Monjardin at the end of a leg or stage of the Camino. Very few pilgrims actually spent their night there, and this meant a loss of income for the village. Such was the complaint of the waiter at the bar where James stopped for a beer. The waiter grumbled about the government, which, according to him, did nothing to address the country's problems of unemployment and the consequent creation of geriatric villages, from which the young fled in search of work and a better future in the larger cities.
At the time I walked my first Camino in 2012, Spain was in the throes of an economic and employment crisis. More than 30% of young people were unemployed, and many of the people I met on the Camino were in this age group, and they were walking there to try to plan the course of their lives and to use the downtime to do something inspirational. At the time, too, many villages were dying out. All the young people were moving to the cities, or at least larger towns where employment could be found. One case in point was Fontebardon, which was quite derelict when I went there in 2012, but which has seen a renaissance since then, as have other places on the Camino, thanks to the large number of pilgrims walking the way.
Friendly waiter serves James a selection of tapas and his favorite pimentos de padron, while James tells him he plans to walk to Logroño the following day. Logroño is nearly 40 kilometers away, and the waiter suggests that James ought to stop at Torres de Rio or Viana, which are not that far away. Nevertheless, the following morning, James sets off at the crack of dawn, determined to make it to Logroño. As he walked past fields, little by little the world around him came alive. Dawn was followed by a beautiful sunrise, and soon he was seeing signs of life. At Torres de Rio, James stopped for a brunch at what seemed like a popular restaurant. As there were no free places, he joined a young lady who was sitting on her own at a table. Here we meet Lisa, who James finds out is a Londoner from Kingston. As the two got chatting, she remarked that James spoke very good English, but as often happens to us Maltese, Lisa could not quite place where he came from. From Italy, from Greece. She was not surprised when he explained that he came from Malta. Funnily enough, she told him, I met a Maltese pilgrim yesterday at Los Arcos. A young lady, a very nice person. He wondered who this Maltese lady could be. It was quite possible that he knew her. This would not be unusual given Malta's small population and the very active social life in the country. But it was getting late, and so hoping that they would meet again along the Camino, James took his leave and proceeded at a fast pace to reach Logroño at dusk. This time, as he had arrived so late, the sleeping arrangements at the albergue were somewhat unusual. The only bed the pretty hospitaliera could offer him was in the open loggia overlooking the garden. James had no option but to accept. This, too, after all, was an experience. Later, tired from so much walking, James sat at one of the bars on La Plaza Mayor to have a bite while he drank a glass of Rioja Reserva. The square was crowded with people enjoying dinner and drinks. He wondered whether the Maltese lady was there among them. But how was he to know? It had been a long day, and just as he was about to leave the square to go to his sleeping quarters, he saw a group of young people in fancy costumes who set themselves up at the end of the square and started to play their instruments, accompanying the music with their singing. Suddenly, there was magic in the air, music, fun, and laughter. Ese lugar que tienes cielito y no junto a la otra, no se lo desarrollé. Who are these street singers? James inquired, and he too was told, they are university students who play and sing to raise money for themselves so they can continue their studies. It is a very old tradition. We will see in the coming episodes how the Latuna singers enrich our story with their song, embracing both our protagonists. Stephen and I will be back next week on Monday at 6:30 to continue telling the story of Stephen's book, The Path to Redemption. For a repeat of today's episode, tune in to Campus 103.7 on Thursday at 3 p.m. Until then, we both thank you for listening, and we look forward to next Monday for Episode 5.